The lake sturgeon hasn't changed much since the time of the dinosaurs and are considered river giants, growing up to 9 feet and 275 pounds. The sturgeon was once abundant in the Tennessee River, but by 1961, it had completely disappeared. The Tennessee Aquarium Conservation Institute is part of a Save the Sturgeon program that has spent the past 15 years working to repopulate the Tennessee River with these gentle giants. Recently, the Institute released more young lake sturgeon into the river, bringing the total up to 57 sonic-tagged lake sturgeon. The Tennessee River Gorge Explorer added monitoring equipment to help track these fish. There have been 29 receivers established from Knoxville to the Nickajack Dam with a sonic receiver on the River Gorge Explorer and a barge towboat. I was in the middle of the Tennessee River on the River Gorge Explorer to hear the sonic tags of the newest young lake sturgeon that were released into the Tennessee River.
What's your name?
Bernie Kahida, and I'm with the Tennessee Aquarium Conservation Institute.
This is the background noise. And this is what the actual receiver looks like that's actually in the water. And this is just a weight to get it down.
And how many of those are out here?
We got 29 of them. Okay. And this unit and this is all together in a cylinder like this. This is just a different mobile unit. All right, so let me get this down in the water. Turn this up a little. And here goes the first sturgeon into the water. And we'll see if we can't hear something. So we're actually releasing 9 sturgeon today. 8 of them have tags. One, we put a tag in twice and it came out twice, so we decided just to release that sturgeon without a tag. Did you hear that? That click, 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 click. That was sturgeon number 22735. Go. And so that was 22738, a different fish. So we recorded two different fish so far. So let me refresh here and see how many more sturgeon we've seen of the 8.
What's the maximum number of simultaneous signals that this can discern?
I think if they beep at exactly the same time, it's only going to record one. Like I say, they're set for every 3 minutes. It's probably not exactly 3 minutes. But you can hear, now that we've got so many fish in the water, we're almost getting a constant recording of the signals.
And each of the sturgeon has a unique signature?
Yes. So far we've heard from sturgeon 22738, 3341, 35, and 39. So they all, and they're sequential, the tag numbers.
Are there any previously released sturgeon that have these tags?
These 8 bring the total number to 57 in the river, but we had 49 that have been tagged over the last 2 years that a graduate student at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville has been monitoring and following around for the last year and a half or so. And the size of the sturgeon that we've had tags in range from 20 inches up to 4.5 feet. So we've got some fish that are almost reaching sexual maturity. The really cool thing about this project is it's a long-term commitment by all of our partners. And in the press releases, you've seen the partners that we're involved with. It takes a village to raise a sturgeon. These fish, we're not even going to know if they're going to spawn. The males don't spawn till they're 15 to 20 years old. So right now, we should start seeing some males that are ready to spawn. The females, it may be 22 to 33 years before they're ready to spawn. Of course, all the information we have is from northern lake sturgeon. We don't know if the fish down here in the south will mature earlier because the temperatures are warmer or not. It's a new frontier. When these things disappeared from the Tennessee River in the 1960s, nobody had really collected any scientific information on our southern populations of lake sturgeon. So these genetically are northern lake sturgeon, but environmentally they're southern lake sturgeon. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens biologically in this environment. When they're ready to spawn, is there going to be appropriate habitat for them to spawn below the dams? Are they going to try to migrate upstream past the dams? Because in the Great Lakes, they can migrate 140 miles from the Great Lakes up into tributaries to spawn. And so these fish want to move upstream. Are they going to go through with barges? During real high water, will they go up over spillways? We don't know. But our listening devices will let us know what their movement is. If they do spawn in the tailwaters, is there going to be appropriate spawning habitat? If they spawn successfully, will the fertilized eggs, the embryos, will they hatch? They sit there anywhere from a week to 2 weeks before they hatch, depending on the water temperature. Once they hatch, the little larval sturgeon, they actually get up into the water column and they have to drift anywhere on average from about 14 to 26 miles. Are they going to hit water that's too still in the reservoirs below the tailwaters, sink to the bottom and die? Or are these reservoirs going to be riverine enough that they do that drift successfully where they can start free swimming and not get suffocated by the mud? So there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of cool scientific research that we're going to be able to do on these fish for years to come. It's pretty exciting being a sturgeon biologist or an aquatic biologist in general around the Tennessee Aquarium now. We're doing a lot of cool stuff.
What's the range on your receiver system?
It's 500 meters, which is over 1,500 feet. And so really, if there's a receiver on one shore, it's going to hear from bank to bank and down and upstream quite a ways. The graduate student, they can actually hook up hydrophones to a headset and really pinpoint directly where a sturgeon is and get it pretty accurate to figure out what habitat it's using during what time of the year.
Do the monitors, they put out a signature for the fish, but they also give other environmental information, don't they?
Yeah, we have some tags now that actually record the temperature that the fish is at and the depth that it is at. Those tags are quite a bit more expensive than the tags that just emit a signal, so we don't have a lot of those, but we're putting in grant money to get more of those so we can get more information about where the fish is actually sitting and its habitat that it's in. This device right here is going to be on the River Gorge Explorer, and we're actually going to have folks riding up and down here. They're going to be citizen scientists actually collecting data as we move down towards the gorge and back. I know Grace and John and the other naturalists on board are excited to be able to do some science. We also have water chemistry equipment on board the River Gorge Explorer, so we can do some basic water chemistry parameters to sort of correlate that with the sturgeon also and what they're doing or not doing, like dissolved oxygen and water temperature. When we originally started this project, we thought we'd be stocking sturgeon for 20 years. Not only do we need the appropriate numbers, we need the appropriate genetic diversity, because the greater genetic diversity you have, the better the fish are able to handle changes in temperature, oxygen, disease, potential climate change coming down the way. Every time we catch a fish, we take a fin clip and we do genetics on it. And right now, it looks like we're going to have to stock for 25 years, an additional 10 years to reach the genetic diversity of the parent population up in Wisconsin from the Wolf River. But then monitoring is going to be going on. If females don't spawn till they're 30, you know, another 10 or 15 years beyond that. So this is really a long-term project. It's going to allow students in the region for decades to come to do research. It's pretty cool.
Sure.
Why do we care about a lake sturgeon? Why are we spending all these resources to put them back in the Tennessee River? Well, first of all, sturgeon are some of the most awesome fishes ever. They have fossils that date back to the Cretaceous. There's two North American fossils that were totally articulated. They're really gorgeous, from 78 and 65 million years ago. And they don't look a whole lot different from the sturgeon swimming today. So these are literally swimming fossils. They get up to 9 feet long, 275 pounds, and they live 150 years up in the Great Lakes area. So it's going to be part of our river megafauna, our river giants. But even if we're talking about species that aren't so magnificent, like the Barron's Tab minnow, which only gets, you know, about 3 or 4 inches long, why do we care about that? Well, for an ecosystem to run, it needs its pieces. And those pieces include the big fishes like lake sturgeon, the small fishes, the mussels, the snails, the aquatic invertebrates, the plankton. It's all interrelated. And every time you remove a species, you remove a brick from that foundation of the ecosystem, and it gets weaker. Eventually, you move enough bricks, and the whole ecosystem could potentially collapse. And our river ecosystems give us pretty much fresh water. The more the ecosystem is harmed, the less it cleans the water, and the more it costs you and me to pay our water bills, because the water facilities have to do more and more to clean the water. I mean, mussels are filter feeders. They actually clean the water for us. And so having all these pieces of the ecosystem in place help us out. And then lastly, I just think it's the moral thing to do. I mean, you know, all these critters were here doing great, and people have sort of messed stuff up. And if we are intelligent higher beings, then we should take care of these creatures around us and make sure that they're still there.
The Tennessee Aquarium Conservation Institute at the Tennessee Aquarium is participating in the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or AZA's, new initiative. It's SAFE, Saving Animals from Extinction. You can learn more about these conservation efforts online at www.tnaqua.org/AZA-SAFE. For WUTC's Around and About, this is Rabbit.